Hello, hello, Forefront family. Welcome to Open Studio number 7. Happy Monday. Happy August. I can hardly believe it is August 2022. And I cannot believe that we are literally two weeks away from ending the W3CR, the very first W3CR. It's been an absolutely incredible journey, thanks to our resident creators, including Kabuki and Nico. Demo will be joining us shortly, I hope. Kabuki and Nico, good morning or good evening. Kabuki, what time is it where you are, my friend?
Well, it's now 7 in the evening, so I'm ready to pack up and kind of finish the working day.
Yes, yes. Well, good evening to you, my friend. Thank you for being here. Let's just actually do a retrospective here. I am very, very fortunate to be able to, my job is to actually attend these amazing sessions. So I'm very fortunate to be able to accompany you on your journey and to think about all the sort of provocative questions that come up during your sessions. So Kabuki, when I was watching your session on the Cables GL demo, which was just remarkable that this no code tool even exists, I remember you were talking about how inspiration comes from very strange places for you. And you were saying, you know, even though this is, I think you were talking about the movement of the square. And at first you said it looks strange because we're currently lacking a material. And then you said, what we need to do is give shading to it. And you were absolutely right. The moment that you added that shaded material and it gave it texture and color, all of a sudden it wasn't just a square, a flat square, but now it has feeling to it. Now it has a three-dimensional, realistic sort of interaction with its environment. I sort of thought to myself, what are the analogies here? You know, what are the sort of analogies with your creative process? When you talk about getting inspiration from strange places, can you give us an idea of like a recent story of where you happen to get inspiration from a completely unexpected place? The moment where something goes from looking flat, low fidelity, to the moment where it's suddenly transformed, and it could be a very simple thing that you introduce, but now it's suddenly transformed into something that has life and has like a real power and emotion to it. Is there something that's coming to mind for you when I bring that up?
Yeah, it's an interesting example because, you know, obviously I'm coming very much from the world of sound and the whole kind of visual aspect of the work I'm currently invested in is kind of something I'm also discovering myself. So I thought the example you gave was very interesting where, you know, once you have the cube and it's just kind of like a flat object, and then once you add the material, it becomes something in space. It has some sort of physical reality. And the thing that I most recently really got interested in, and that I'm also looking forward to implement in the into the final piece I want to develop is something I kind of got into over the weekend. You know, I try to use the time in between sessions to go further down these rabbit holes that I explore while I'm on screen. And actually what I discovered was something called the material capture. I guess for Nico and for Demo, this is more usual, but for me it was something new, that you are basically able to capture the physical reality of a room in terms of the lighting and the surfaces of the room, and then apply this to an object. And all of a sudden, you know, I was able to, you know, define this material capture myself, and to this have this three-dimensional space that I design in a way. So I no longer just have, you know, the object itself and the kind of color and a texture itself, but I can define the room that it's in, and this reflection on the object actually creates kind of like a feeling. And I thought that was an interesting kind of analogy, maybe in music when I apply reverb, you know, you also put something into a physical space, and there's this technology called, or like a method called a convolution reverb, where you can go into an existing physical space and you have to make a specific sound recording there. You have basically send a kind of a sweep through all the frequencies into this room. You record the resulting kind of reflection, and then you can simulate, you know, putting some sound into a virtual recreation of this room. So I love to see these kind of analogies between, you know, the world of sound, which I'm very familiar with, and then mm-hmm. try to see these kind of paradigms that are similar. So that was kind of like one of my recent kind of discoveries, where I felt like, oh, I can now recreate these virtual environments that I know from the sound world through reverb, through the kind of reverberation of physical spaces, real and sometimes also impossible. You know, I love to have something where maybe I recreate an impossible 10 feet long piano that's made out of concrete, you know, and then send a sound into that. So I feel that's a lot of fun to experiment with these impossible situations and places.
I love that. I love that. And I actually saw a really delightful parallel, because I was observing, like I said, this moment in Kabuki session where he was talking about the moment where the square takes on life. And it was just a very simple sort of addition or transformation. But Demo, in your second session, I picked up on a moment that felt very analogous to that, where you were breaking down the soundtrack and you came to this whooshing sound. And you said, I like to have a sound that mimics or follows the movement of one of the agents in my visual piece, one of your creatures, so that you think it's really there. And of course, this is what I love so much about the W3CR, is that I did not actually hear that whooshing sound until you picked it out. But the sort of the quality of attention that creators can bring to bear when they've been working at something for so many years, and then they've really honed that sort of the depth and the quality of attention, is quite remarkable. And it may be something that I don't consciously pick up on, but for Demo, it made the difference. Having that whooshing sound that mimics the movement of that watery creature is the reason why I feel like, oh my gosh, this world could be possible, even though it is quote unquote impossible. It feels really real and concrete.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Right, because I haven't made any test. Okay. And as Kabuki was saying, when I started using 3D, it was like pretty intuitive to me, because I found many, many similarities from Ableton, which is the software I use to make music. When I passed to Blender, there was so much similarities, at least in the way I understand software. And so it was kind of intuitive to me to start using the software and get into the way of creating. And yeah, about that detail that you're telling, Caroline, maybe in the experience you don't see it as a conscious thing, that whooshing sound that follows the movement of something, but I feel like in the overall experience with the piece, it just makes you feel like it's really happening, and it's everything like in the same place. It's not like music and the video and they're separate. Mm. Like it's this music is happening in this place. So that's what I try to do. Like have at least one sound that is following the movement of an object. And yeah, it doesn't have to be like really in your face, but it's like just happening. And I think like unconsciously it will affect the overall experience of the piece.
It's often those most subtle things that make a difference. Nico, what comes up for you, my friend, when we're having this conversation about these subtle transformations that suddenly transform something into something that, you know, looks artificial, doesn't look authentic, to all of a sudden it becomes real, it feels real to you as a creator, and a light bulb comes on, and you're like, I'm really on to something. You have a quite unique context, because your ultimate goal is to build a real life eco village, and you're working up to the prototype, and right now you're working on a video game design to sort of make that concrete as a proof of concept. But what comes up for you when we're talking about these sort of moments of epiphany?
I feel like those are the things that you usually shouldn't like really push for it. I feel like when it comes, it just kind of comes. It's more like you listening to the intuition, and you listening to like you're kind of like tuning into the universe and then see like what it's saying, instead of like tuning in insight into yourself and then see what you're saying, which I think like both are really essential and helpful. But I think a lot of like really great ideas usually happen when you're like least expecting it. that's kind of how I feel.
Yes, that is a very, very good point, my friend. And thank you for just in general. I want to go kind of over to your session now. I loved your first session on permaculture. You described it as a spiritual science, and I'm so appreciative of the time that you've taken to sort of build up the context with the community of your philosophy and what inspires you before you jumped into the really technical things. First, I wanted to ask you, because this may not be evident to folks, what do you mean by spiritual science?
So I think the scientific world is predominantly focusing on like the phenomena that can be tested and documented and then kind of analyzed into statistics. And so I think the main, elements that make modern science into like such a solid and foundational belief system is that everything that that's included in modern science are 100, like there is no examples that prove them wrong, sort of. Like gravity, for example, when you have an apple here, it always falls. Like there's never one time where it doesn't fall. And then if that happens, like that will like kind of contradict the scientific theory, where like the spiritual science are like works in the opposite way, where it's very hard to quantify, it's very hard to prove, but it doesn't mean that it's not scientific, in my opinion. Not just my opinion, I think a lot of other people would also like argue that, you know, like the science of thought, for example, or, like how can you actually measure a thought, even though there's like neuroscientists that are working on that, you know, like mapping out your brain and then like see the areas of neuron that's lit up as you're having a thought. But then like, you know, like when they as the things that they describe in meditations, like what about the thought that inspired the thought? You know, what about like the thought that you had, like, you know, that's like so abstract, all the way levels up, like how do you measure that? Or how do you measure like, you know, like this, this event that happened in your dream, you know, like all these things, there's people that have studied that, and there's people that really spent time documenting that and like learning that with a very scientific approach, but it hasn't been like fully accepted in the mainstream scientific world because it's not, you know, it's not something that you can test like 100 million times and it will always come out as the same result because it's so unpredictable and very hard to grasp. But it doesn't mean that it's not scientific, I think.
And I love the example that you're bringing up about thought in particular. This is a really good, this is really sort of a good analogy, right? Because I think science or modern science or the paradigm that you're talking about, sort of Newtonian science and then carry on from quantum physics or like highly quantitative science, we tend to think that there's only one way that we can know or experience truth or judge or discern. And as we can see from artists, for instance, what Demo does, what Kabuki does, what you do, Nico, when you're creating, you're in a mode of thinking and experiencing and making judgment that is not quantitative. I mean, that feeling that it happens when, you know, Demo finds that sound of whooshing that knows that this is the one that makes my creature more real, or Kabuki knows that all of a sudden this object in three-dimensional space it feels more authentic and has become real. This is not a quantitative judgment. People would call it a sort of an aesthetic judgment. But athletes, for instance, professional athletes, they are also constantly judging and discerning and evaluating, but their mode of thinking is not a quantitative sort of typical conventional scientific method. But that doesn't make it any less precise. It doesn't make it any less effective, as we can see from elite athletes that are able to do things that most humans can't. So I think this is very provocative. This is why I'm very appreciative that you're bringing up these things, my friend. I'm very, very appreciative. Kabuki and Demo, I'm curious, my friends, what do you think of when you hear the phrase spiritual science? Is this something that you think you easily understand, or is this something that to you from your life and your philosophy, you're wondering, it's a little bit more abstract to you? I'm curious.
I mean, there's a contradiction there that I think was quite interesting when Nico mentioned how you obviously have these experiments to verify your findings, you know, and obviously if something is like a fact or a theory, a proven theory usually translates among, you know, a long kind of like a space and time. So that's something that's I feel like maybe a different terminology for me, but I feel maybe what I understand, kind of understand as a spiritual science is these aspects that you know to be true, but you can't really explain why you feel that mm-hmm. way. And I feel there's a lot of kind of this intuition is something that you train a lot as an artist or as a creative or as an athlete. You know, for instance, if you are a professional basketball player, to know exactly what's the next move, where do you need to go, like how's the defense kind of building up, and all these things. There's so many variables, you know, just looking alone at a chess game, like how many outcomes exist. You know, it's totally impossible to even run like a kind of simulation on the spot and then tell you, okay, this is the best kind of next move for a basketball player. But as a human, and if you immerse yourself long enough in this kind of environment and these situations, you develop something that transcends, I would say, you know, conventional explanations, and that you then can put into use and then, you know, expand further on that. So that's what I would consider like a spiritual science. When I sit down and I write something, or I develop something, and then I get to a crossroads, and then this understanding, okay, this is the way I should be mm-hmm. going, you know, even though I can't explain mm-hmm. why. That's something I feel like is a very interesting it's a very interesting feeling and a very interesting situation to be in, you know, to have that. I think it depends also maybe a lot on trust in yourself, that, you know, okay, I managed the situation many times before, and based on my experience, this is doable, or this is the way I might find success. And then maybe through this, you create these kind of amplifying loops where you also then are going into a situation with more confidence, and through this, you are then able to get better results. I don't know. It's just like a hunch I have after, you know, all these years of being in a creative situation, always kind of going out on a limb mm-hmm. and putting myself into scary situations that I don't know how to get out of. You know, it's always this intuition that I feel like, ah, okay, I, you know, like the candle flickers, and then that's the way, you know, there might be an a way out of this cave, you know. So these kind of tropes from movies I sometimes mm-hmm. have to use as an analogy, you know, how I make use of this skill that I can't really explain.
I love that. Demo, how about you, my friend? What comes up for you with this phrase, spiritual science?
I think like it's kind of logical to me that there's these events, like scientific events, that can't have no like static and ethical explanation. And I think that it might be like full of those events, like usually because, as maybe Nico said about dreams, for example, that it's like a really magical and non-existent place, like in the ethical and maybe scientific talk. I don't really know, but it's really interesting. And yeah, it's logical to me that they don't have like a scientific and like static explanation. And it's really interesting that, like, I may have never heard of that term, maybe not formally. Yeah, like Dwayne is saying, for example, no gravity in dreams. Yeah, definitely. Such as that. It's really interesting. And Dwayne is also asking if we think that this intuition may be related to our base, or like a pattern matching, essentially. And yeah, it might be like some kind of patterns. And these might have like a scientific explanation that no one has access to, because it's like really, really magical and out of our way of understanding things in our mind in an ethic way, rational way. Yeah, really interesting.
Maybe just to add, I always love this fact that when you kind of investigate dreams, how there's these logical fallacies, you know, as Wayne mentioned, no gravity, or this thing that when you look at your hands, you don't have all fingers on them, or like they're mm-hmm. kind of just one big blob. And then the other thing I also find very interesting is like you can't turn on the light on or off in a dream. These are things that I observed, and I also read about in these kind of manuals how to kind of dive into lucid dreaming. You know, these are kind of the techniques to understand that you enter the dream. Just try to turn on a light switch. It's not working. Try to look at your hands. You can't identify your fingers. And I think the third one is look at the watch. The watches are also not working in dreams. So I always wonder, like, where does this come from? Why is that something that we all have in common when we are in dreams that we can't, you know, identify the time? I find that very curious.
That is so fascinating.
I think it's,
I'm going to have to try that now.
It is fascinating. Maybe it's because it's an unconscious experience. It's like you're so connected to your unconscious that those little things don't have space in your dreams to take place. Like, for example, turning on the light. These don't have space for your mind to make them real, because you're like so connected to an unconscious experience. But yeah, it's really interesting that you can turn on the light.
I'm gonna have to test this now the next time I realize that I'm dreaming. First you have to realize that you're dreaming in order to then remember what Kabuki said, and then I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna try to look at my hands, turn on the lights, or look for a cloth. So this is super interesting. My ability to fly, yes, I always try to fly, and it's really, really frustrating. That also does not work out too well for me.
You could get better at it by training on it, like just mental training. Like, maybe not good at first, but like just the more you focus, the better you fly. It's like
Love
Avatar,
it.
Kind of.
Love it. You know, and I want to go back and just address very quickly this really great question from Dwayne. Of intuition being related to pattern matching. And I hear this a lot, but the reason why I'm going to push back against this is because there was no, like, if you think about the huge innovations, there was no pattern before Shakespeare did what he did. There was no pre-Shakespeare. There was no pre-Albert Einstein. There was no pre-relativity theory. I mean, there are these sort of breakthrough, like paradigm shifting discoveries and creative achievements that cannot be explained away by saying that someone merely took existing patterns and then sort of put them together in a new way. I think intuition, it's kind of a shady term that sort of evades exact definition, and as well as it should. But I think pattern matching can be like on the level of intuition can be on the level of putting together existing patterns and constructions in a new way, which is more like innovation or novelty. But I think intuition, the more powerful thing about intuition that I think Nico is tapping into when she asks, well, what lies behind the theory that gave birth to the X? What was the first sort of instigating factor? And oftentimes this is what I think is intimated by what Kabuki said, creating something from nothing. This nothingness is actually everything, which is, again, I'm drawing so many parallels when I'm watching your sessions, Nico, talking about Taoism, the Tao that can be spoken of is not the true Tao. This source of intuition is nothing, but at the same time, it contains everything that was, is, or can be. I'm getting super philosophical because Nico has given me permission to do so by talking about spiritual science. But that is my pushback to talking about intuition merely as pattern matching. I think it's much more than that. So to kind of go forward a little bit here, again, taking a little bit of what Nico's session as an inspiration. Nico talked very beautifully about the Tao of physics and about how we have essentially separated and compartmentalized our entire ecology. Nature itself, she says, is actually very complex. It's an interwoven entity where you cannot take any single thing out of isolation without impacting the entire context. And yet, because modern science is largely based on an analytical reductionist point of view, that's exactly what we do. We grasp something in its isolation. We have groups of scientists that are sort of warring stakeholders, focusing on just one aspect of reality, and saying through their papers, through their thesis, that this is reality, this is the nature of the world. And we have very few people thinking about synthesis, about how it all kind of fits together. I found myself thinking about creators when Nico was sort of painting this picture of people drawing out isolated things from the entire web of being and focusing on that. What What are some of the more unexpected, or the sort of, I won't put the unexpected modifier on it, Kabuki, Demo, and Nico, when you think of yourself as implanted in a web that allows you to be a creator, what are sort of the factors of that ecosystem, the sort of things that need to be in that environment that allow you to be a creator beyond your singular ability, beyond the things that you yourself can control? What do you need to exist in that web of ecology, in that web of being that enables you to do what you do, that you feel perhaps just doesn't get any attention at all? I'm curious about how you think of that.
I mean, for me, always the answer to this kind of question is that without any boundaries, I can't exist as a creative. You know, I need to have some kind of canvas that I can direct my focus onto. Otherwise, you know, it all just evaporates into space. So to stay on that kind of philosophical paradigm, I would definitely say that without limitations, without form, without structures to kind of, you know, base myself on, I can't really express myself. You know, if I don't have anything to fall back on, you know, in terms of, let's say I'm a musician, so there's harmony. And even if I kind of avoid a conventional diatonic or 12-tone equal-tempered scales, you know, there's still systems that I base myself on. Even if it's a system that I develop myself, if I say I want to divide the octave into, let's say, 17 pitches, and this is how I do it, you know, I still need some kind of reference point. Otherwise, I can't exist as an artist. So I feel like that's maybe also where the idea of this pattern recognition comes from, that we constantly have our, you know, focus directed at these limitations and also at these existing traditions or paradigms, you know, which define us which even define, you know, the art form. If you would not have any kind of limitations, where would music end and painting start, you know? So there's already the medium that defines how you express yourself, even without the technical skill, you know. Even if we're taking that out of the equation, the simple fact that, you know, I transcend one kind of way of interacting with the world with another, there's kind of like these boundaries that define what it is that I use to express my feelings or how I want to interact with the world. So for me, definitely, you know, taking all my kind of intellectual kind of progress with the medium that I interact with out of the equation, without having six strings on a guitar and without having, you know, the scale divided into these 12 notes, I would not have been able to write my first song. So maybe that would be a good answer to your question.
I love that, Kabuki.
So I have a point, but I completely forgot about that by what Kabuki said. But I remember it was like actually something complementary to what Kabuki was saying. So what Kabuki was saying is like the order, kind of like the formula that exists, and then like work within that boundary, and then just like have creativity like bounce like crazy within that boundary. Because if you don't have anything to bounce with, like your energy just like kind of can go to too many places. And my point is kind of the opposite. I guess because the way I grew up, it was like so much boundaries being put on creativity, you know, as a society in certain places in Asia. So I just like almost intuitively wants to be like, whenever I see a boundary, I'm like, no. I'm just like, I want to stand on the other side. But I think maybe, you know, maybe both mentality can be used, you know, interchangeably at different situations, you know, I think for me, I like grown to like enjoy like just seeing things that I like, or like being at situations that I'm not super familiar with. And I think this mentality can be used, you know, different aspects, you know, like on a technical level, I've kind of just grown into being more comfortable, like being uncomfortable with certain like softwares and things, like working with stuff, like have an idea, but like working with the environment that I'm not like really good at yet. But then like realizing that working on this idea is gonna like kind of help me progress into like the technical challenges that I'm facing is one aspect. But creatively, I also think that it's like inspiring sometimes to be like kind of taken out of the environment that you're in and like just into an environment that you're so not familiar with. Whether it's culturally or, you know, it's a location or it's the medium and the theory that you're focusing your creative energy on. So, and I think that that's always when, like, unexpectedly there's, like, new inspirations coming in because you're like, oh, my God, like, I didn't even know there's, like, this thing that's so super cool. And it could be, like, you know, like a place that you go or, like, a YouTube video even or, you know, just, like, a new theory that you learn and that completely just changes how you see things.
Cool. How about you, yeah. Demo?
I think I'm like on both sides, depending on what I'm creating and what state I'm on. I may have like a lot of limitations to make something, and that could be really in my favor, which I do sometimes. I have like two Abletons, like one in one computer and one in another computer. In one, I have like no plugins, only Ableton stuff. And in the other one, it's full of samples, like endless folders of samples, endless plugins, like every plugin that I love. And it's really interesting, the results, the different results that I get using each different computer. They're both really interesting results, but really, really different. And that's really interesting. And yeah, I think like usually when I get my favorite works, this is when I push myself to not overthink what I'm doing or what I'm creating, like just being there and having like no expectations of the result and not even knowing what can happen, like just starting and going with that flow. Which I think in some mind saying that for me would be like putting no limitations to their result. And sometimes I have to work putting limitations to me because I have to do a technical thing, maybe for someone, for work, that they tell me you have to do this. And it's a different way to do a work. But when it's for me and I have like my favorite results, it's just like usually... not thinking about what can happen and just playing with stuff, like benefiting myself from errors too, like as Nico was saying, like Blender, for example, is a software that I'm still getting used to and I'm still learning a lot, and I have a lot to learn. And in each piece that I make, I usually make things that are really interesting to me that just happen not on purpose, because there's many things that I don't know. And I have a lot of results that are from errors or from trying things that that I really don't know how they work. And I might get a shape that it's interesting because it's all broken. So, and with music too, like I love breaking stuff and see what happens with that, like a sample, for example.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
I want to kind of circle back to this if we have time, because I had a question that come up. But right now, I want to pass the baton over to Kabuki. And Kabuki, why don't you share with the Forefront fam briefly your sessions last week, where you went, and sort of what the Forefront family can look forward to with this next week of sessions, this upcoming week of sessions, I should say.
Sure. So that was week two we're talking about, and it was all about looking at the tools that I'm looking to employ for that particular project and different techniques. So it was, you know, looking into the toolbox, understanding what's available, how it could be applied. And that was kind of like what leads me to my plans this week. And the session tomorrow is called "It's only a bad idea if you commit to it," which is one of my creative mantras, because I just love to create without kind of regulating myself or kind of thinking, oh, this is this is not me, or this is stupid, or this is silly, but I rather try to, you know, go down these rabbit holes without judging if that's a good idea or a bad idea. And that's why, you know, it's the same like when you're investing in a stock market, you only lose money if you actually sell the stock when it's at a lower price than when you bought it. So I feel it's the same way with an idea. Only when I say this is the final iteration of my project, and this is kind of like what I want to share with the world, only then is it actually a good idea or a bad idea. It's almost like Schrodinger's cat. You know, all these ideas exist in these different boxes, and they can have a life of their own. And only in the end, you know, will I make that conscious decision to let one of them live. So that's a session on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, and then on Friday I will do a session called Famous Last Words, which is where I will really kind of commit to an idea, which then, you know, I will no longer modify in a major way. And I always like to use this analogy from the music world. You know, if you look back at the 50s and 60s when recording technology was just kind of became available, you know, magnetic tape obviously was the first big breakthrough in studio technology that allowed creativity. So back then you had, if you listen to the kind of first Beatles albums, they were all recorded on 4-track maybe, you know, so you had like a 2-inch tape, and that was divided into 4 quadrants or 4 sections, and then you were able to record an overdub. So what I love about the music from this period is once you laid down a track, you could no longer at the end when the other parts were recorded to it, you could no longer just say, let's just, you know, have a different drum kit or let's play a different bass line. But you were kind of committed to this idea and you had to kind of follow through. So that's why I love this mentality to say, okay, this is the direction I'm going to go down, and everything I do from now on has to complement that idea and has to make that idea shine. And, you know, I might even go to greater lengths at this point to, you know, dress the idea instead of revising it, because I just feel like there's so much more to learn from kind of committing to something and then seeing it through to the end. And I feel it's the same in life as well. You know, it's so easy to constantly make up your mind what it is, who you want to be, who you want to be with, what are your goals in life, but to actually commit to something and then seeing it through and kind of giving it your best shot along the way. I feel these are great qualities that I value in the people around me, or like in my mentors or my idols. So this is something also I feel like I want to carry the torch, and yeah, those will be my famous last words.
Amazing.
On Friday.
I love it, Kabuki. Thank you. Nico, I pass the baton on to you, my friend. What have you been up to? And tell the Forefront family what you have planned for us this week.
I've been stressed. I'm very stressed about this project, because I think I'm just so ambitious about what I want to create. So there literally will be days where I just sit in front of the computer and think about all the things I want to create, and spend like 20 minutes just feeling stressed and thinking about it. Not super healthy, but so it's kind of inspired me to regroup and rethink about the project in a more realistic way, and think about what I can do realistically within the limited time to achieve the goal I want to achieve. And so this week it will be continuation of a more technical demo. So we'll do a lot of, you know, Blender and Unity, maybe into the detail of texturing, modeling, and optimization flow, and also maybe a little bit of live coding on putting all the elements together and making interactions within Unity. Live coding, it's always tricky, because sometimes it might not seem like a lot of things are happening all at once. So it might not be the most interesting or engaging sessions, but so I'll see. Maybe I'll combine a little bit of live coding with more just conceptual explanation. And I've been working on the whole general project and description for the Agartha project, where the project is beyond just the game demo itself, but the game demo is kind of a project within this whole ecosystem about that advocates solar punk regenerative living. And So the aim is still, the goal is still that by the end of this, we hope to launch this project on Juicebox, which is a crowdfunding platform, a Web3 crowdfunding platform. And the people at Juicebox have been super helpful. They really love the project, and then they will do everything they can to assist us to put this on the platform. So that's the goal for the end of the residency. So like later this week and then next week, we'll dive more into like the logistics on like, you know, how to create a like project description. What are like, what exactly are you describing? And I think eventually the goal is that for Agartha to launch as an artist creative DAO, or creative DAO, where like a lot more people can just plug in and collaborate and work on the project that they enjoy, if it's like, if the philosophy kind of like resonate with the overall like solarpunk regenerative living philosophy. So that part I'm really excited about, but we'll see how that comes. And so today, at this week's session, it will be same time, Wednesday and Friday, more on the technical side, maybe a little bit into the pitch deck and the concept side. And next week, which is be more on like the, what you would call like the business or the idea side.
And just quick question. You said that the Juicebox team, you've spoken with them, they're really hyped about the project. Is this something that they normally do, that if you want to launch on their project, they jam with you and they kind of help you with that launch? That's a normal thing? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, they're very open. So you can just join their Discord, and they have the month meeting. They have like a channel up for like project launches. So you can just say, hey, I'm working on this thing. And then they will usually just hang out with you in Discord and
chat with you. All right, Demo, on to you, my friend. What have you been up to, and what can the Forefront family look forward to with you and YH4?
Last week I did some sessions like showing maybe from the inside of my creations. First session I did 3D, and I started, before starting the session, I had like a 3 or 2 hour session making a 3D environment. So I started the session showing how I did this, and maybe covering the ways and the technical ways and maybe tricks that I usually use to create this. But I also wanted to show the way I flow during a 3D piece, how something can get into something and that something can be already an environment. So I really wanted to show that process. And second session last week, it was on the music side. I showed each stem from, like, I deconstructed each instrumental that I made for the pieces that I have for YH4, and I also started making the music for one that doesn't have sound yet. And yeah, that's what I mainly wanted to do last week, like showing my process from the inside. And this week, as in my game plan set, which I am pretending to follow, I want to interact more with the people. That's why I'm gonna do it on Discord, so everyone like it's able to talk with me. I want to cover, while I'm creating some pieces and showing some technical stuff, maybe. And the pieces that I've been making these days, which I really, really love, I also want to like debate and bring some interesting topics. First session, it's called like 4 Eyes See More Than 2, and I want to talk about how everything is like connected, and you can actually create something individually. Like everything needs to be connected with something or with someone to happen, and that's usually in our favor, because like getting powers together makes things like much more stronger. And I want to cover that in the first session, while also creating. And in the second session, it will be pretty similar, because I also want to like show my inner process creating, but also at the same time bringing some interesting topics that I really want to cover. And I will also make it on Discord, so people that are there make debate with me. The second one, it's called Human's Role, which is something that it's in my mind every day, being a human in this world. It's really interesting to me and concerning to me, and I feel like it's something really important that we really consider, which is a role, especially us, like making art. Where are we going with this? And I feel like there's a lot of answers that are really interesting and a lot of space for debate to that. So I want to cover those things in the sessions for this week.
I love especially that you're, what you just said about the role of humans in this world and the role of creating an art. I'm glad that you're tackling that. With sort of our last 10 minutes, I wanted to do another provocation, if I may. So something else that's very clear, Nico, don't mean to be picking on you, but your sessions are just full of so many riches. Nico is not shying away from having a very strong point of view when she's talking about permaculture, when she's talking about sort of capitalism, the monoculture, agriculture, the sort of thinking behind this. She's not just limiting herself to the realm of agriculture, but she's kind of putting forward, I think, a very strong point of view, a worldview of how we ought to look at the human being's role within the world. Kabuki and Demo, my provocation, and maybe you don't have an answer to this, but what is the big idea? I think if I might venture to say, and of course Nico may have other big ideas, polymath that she is, but I can see that one of the big ideas that is coming through very strongly is this worldview of ecological wholeness. And that's not just about agriculture, but in all ways, looking at our environment and sort of respecting that every single element of that environment has a role, has a value, and how do we stand back and sort of appreciate this entire synthesis and participate in that with love and humility. I think that that's kind of, if I could project myself onto what I understand, that's maybe one of the big ideas that Nico is trying to do through just one manifestation of her work, which is Agartha. Kabuki and Demo, do you have a similar big idea that you are trying to communicate with your work, your entire body of work, as it may be?
I mean, first of all, I very much subscribe to Nico's ideals there. I think that's something very... it's like a real utopia, you know. If everybody would have that same motivation, then obviously we would be looking at a very different place. I think what fascinates me mostly, or what I try to focus on in my work, is the whole transient nature of being, you know, because obviously my art is time-based, so you can't, at least, you know, the traditional way how I used to express myself, you can't hang it in a gallery. You can't, you know, touch it. So it's very much from one moment to the next. So that's why for me, it's always about understanding, you know, our relationship with the fleeting nature of existence, you know, that we aim to understand our purpose, but often, you know, we are getting lost in thought without really being present in the moment, and then being able to really understand reality as it is. There's always this approximation, or we kind of have these models of reality because we are unable to be there at one specific moment and experience it for what it is. So this is really something that I'm very much fascinated with, and also I'm trying to not answer, but pose these questions through my work. You know, what is the nature of reality, and how can we get more in tune with it? And I feel this is something that a lot of the philosophies that move me deal with. You know, if you look at Buddhism, and if you look at meditation, the whole purpose of, you know, silencing the inner voice and stopping this kind of projection into the future and the memories of the past, and understanding that the only moment that is really existing is that very moment you're experiencing right now. And I think that's maybe one of my ideals, to be able, through my work also, you know, to somehow amplify that question, so that maybe also other listeners or viewers will get kind of inspired to find an answer to this for themselves, and maybe then also to experience reality much richer through, ironically, not engaging in any, you know, in any activity to listen to music or look at art or do whatever, but just to be present in that very moment. I feel like that could be a great benefit to humanity as a whole. So that is really kind of my mission.
I love that, Kabuki. Thank you. How about you, Demo? Do you have a big idea that you're trying to communicate through your art?
Yeah, I do. It's something that it's actually hard for me to answer, like, as the way I would like to. I actually also subscribe to Nico's idea and to Nico's goal, definitely. And maybe it's like an ideal that I would have to, but I see it as a very distant thing. So what I actually do with my work is trying to do something that really like translates this mind state of being connected with nature and with what's around us. And I tried, I don't really know if it's something for me, that I'm just like a fan of this and I think that it's really important for me to connect with it, or it's also something that I want to express and I want people to see and connect with this sensitivity that might have an impact on their connection with nature. So I'm not really sure where this comes from, like maybe from both sides, like I need to express this way, but I also want to express this thing so I can have this impact on the people that are seeing it. Like, for example, with my family or my father, that is like not so sensitive about nature and about these environmental things. He actually, through my art, started mentioning some things that are related to nature and with being more sensitive with our environment and with our surroundings. So maybe that definitely is the impact that I would like to make. It's not actually something that I unconsciously am trying to, but I think it goes in the lane in the lane that Nico is going to. But for me, that's something like really, really hard to not hard, but a lot of work to achieve. So I decided to just make art and try to convey that message through my images and sounds.
No.
If I didn't answer. It's like something really complex to me to try to analyze.
You did answer it, my friend. I realized that it's, and this is a conversation that we've had earlier, that, you know, you would prefer perhaps like your default mode of communication is not so much like verbally articulating things. Like, I think you're, and I think it's very powerful to watch you create as well. Like, I'm thinking of your session where that point in your session where you were playing with the plugin and you were saying that I have to find a sound that's reminiscent of the piece that I'm trying to score. And then you found something that you were really delighted with, but you were like, this sounds like it's a forest at night. And I don't know if this is the piece that I'm creating right now, but I'm going to record it. And if it doesn't work for this piece, it might work for another one. So I thought I loved watching you do that, and how, again, this idea of intuition, artistic judgment and intuition is happening on a deep feeling level. It's not like this sort of intellectual abstraction, but it is something that is very powerful and obviously has a real impact in the world and in your work as an artist. So I can read between the lines and understand very much of what you were trying to express, my friend, so I appreciate you. Before we leave, so that Nico doesn't get angry with me for speaking for her, I want to give the microphone to Nico for you to be able to tell me, I'm completely off base, I have no big idea, or that's not the way I would express my big idea. How would you answer that question, my friend? Yeah.
The big ideas, it's like, oh, like the mission, I think like mission statement is quite, usually comes off as like really ambitious, like we all probably like part of us, our inner child, have these things where we see injustice in the world. We're like, I'm going to change that. Or, you know, or at some point, maybe super idealistically, where you think that, like this is all wrong. Like, I'm going to just come and just correct everything and realize just how ridiculous that is. That is for one person to wish to do that, because that's like overlooking at the complexity of the problem. I think Demo was mentioning this earlier. It's just like a lot of these things are like the problem itself is so complex, and therefore like the things that we want to do also becomes complex because of the phenomena that we observe is complex. I don't know if this is what Demo actually meant, but this is sometimes I personally feel that. So like, in the end, I do think that like using art as a medium to actually, you know, like just express how you feel at the moment, even though it could be a very abstract, you know, just like feeling and emotion, but still it can have like immense power if it becomes authentic. So I think at the moment, I wish to continue to learn more about the world, understand more about, you know, like how everything works, because I think in a lot of ways that a lot of the problems that you used to think was it could be just a surface level of the deeper root causes of certain phenomena. So like, I really wish to spend more time learn and understand what are the deeper causes of like some of the things we observe, and also just express that in a way that's as authentic as possible, without trying to you know overachieve, or without trying to tie that too much into like other, like, you know, other intentions that's unrelated to just focusing on like the problems at hand. So I guess that's the mission,
you,
at least today.
Well, I can say that one of the big ideas that's animating the Web3 creator residency is you know, so much of our, especially Western culture, is driven by sort of a utilitarian ethos. We're so busy, and if we're going to take our time to invest in something, then it should have utilitarian value. It's going to somehow make me more money. I'm going to be able to find, you know, the wife or the husband of my dreams. And I think the big idea behind the W3CR is that there's just so much value in getting a community of people together around creating, around exploring, around holding questions, and around the courage to actually say, I have a big idea and I'm trying to realize it, even though it may not be consciously articulated through this work. And it may be quite distant from making a ton of money, but that's there is value in art, there is value in community, there's value in the wandering together through the not knowing. And I can say for myself, you know, it's my job to actually, you know, go to these sessions and to pay attention and to think about the things that y'all are saying. But I've considered myself very, very blessed, because I've had so many aha moments. I wish that it were more possible in some way to kind of communicate this big idea and have this reality. Nate often calls it the genius idea, right? The genius of a community. I wish that this were more possible, but there's so many factors in our society today that are kind of conspiring against that. But so I appreciate all of you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to join me on the 7th, the second to last Open Studio. We are looking forward to seeing you at your sessions this coming week. And again, appreciate all of you. And we'll see you soon in the Discord or Riverside, as it may be. Take good care, everyone. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Have a good day.